What makes this sugya challenging, the methodology, the core methodology of the sugya, is to ask yourself every time you see a Rishon or something, is he operating within Rabbi Yochanan or operating within Ish Lakish? Okay, that's not always clear. I've tried to stress this to you very often throughout the learning. It seems very overwhelming, a lot of ideas, a lot of chakiros, but you have to divide them. Is this a chiddush within Rabbi Yochanan? Is this a kasha according to Rabbi Yochanan, which answer is going to help us sharpen Rabbi Yochanan? Or is this operating within Ish Lakish, a question, a proof? Similarly, just to quote the sugya that will be Mitzvah learning today and tomorrow, similarly to Machlokas Reb Papa and Reb Zvid, let's say, about Mord Lamino, Havimor L'Sheino Mino, similar to the Machlokas Reb Meir and Reb Yehuda about Kirv Negichosa, of can you condense the three Negichos into one day? So for example, we'll see this tomorrow, some of the conversations, either Tur or Yudigavra, is it a universal conversation? It's not always clear. But it's so important. I see a lot of guys your age, when you're starting to learn, be very sloppy about this, and you'll say ideas that are within one context and try to bring to the other context, and they're different. I want you to be able to create two channels side by side, and part of creating the two channels is then you can then better analyze how the two channels talk to each other. Oh, why didn't Rabbi Yochanan agree with this part of Ish Lakish's channel? Why didn't Ish Lakish agree? Which is what the Gemara pretty much does here for us. Why does Rabbi Yochanan reject Ish Lakish? What does Ish Lakish reject Rabbi Yochanan? But that clarity to be able to place things, so much of the sugya is placing things, and to create almost two sugyas that are in parallel. So I'm actually going to give you two shiurim today, and the table is two parts of the table, as opposed to, let's say, Shane and regular and Shisarabim, where there aren't clearly defined shitos. There's no, like, oh, he holds this and he holds that. You have a lot of Amorayim, a few Tanayim, who clocked in with their positions. You can certainly say, oh, from this we can see that he belongs to this approach, but there was no seminal machlokas. Sometimes you have a seminal machlokas, and that machlokas is so primary that it cleaves the sugya into two. Sometimes you have two sugyas. Okay, here it's clear. Isha, Mishum, Chisa, Mishum, Mimon, the Gemara makes it clear. To a lesser degree, and Mord is also pretty clear that if you follow Rav Meir, it's one view of Shara Mord. If you follow Rabbi Yehuda, it's a very different view of Shara Mord. So just train yourself not to homogenize sugyas, but to, not dichotomize sugyas, but to split them. Okay, so that's general, 10,000 feet up, what you should try to carry from the sugya, aside from this chakir or that chakir. Okay? Now, let's start with Ish Lakish. The reason we're starting with Ish Lakish is because Ish Lakish is less dramatic, right? For Ish Lakish to say Isha Mishim Mimono, that doesn't strike us as any new idea, new information. We've had plenty of Niske Mamon that you're chaya for. Okay? Now, the problem is, and you don't have to be an Einstein to understand the problem, or I should say Rabbi Kivega to understand the problem, is that how could you be chayav and call something Mimono when there's nothing tangible for it to be Mimono? And that's why Rabbi Yochanan rejects Mimono. And therefore, he has to define Isho not as Mimono, but Mishum Chitzeth, less Be Mamasha. Okay? And Tosfos gives us this problem. How could you be chai to even watch something that is intangible? One option is for Ish Lakish to say, you know what? When I say the word Mamon, I don't really mean what you're thinking. I mean Pshia, which becomes a milestone moment in Baba Kama, that the word Mamon doesn't have to mean ownership or something akin to it. Mamon can mean Pshia, which takes us all the way back to the Rif, and all the way back to day one, and all the way back to when you still thought the year would take a long time to be over, and now you're realizing you should have listened to me. It's going to be over before you cough, before you sneeze, and now it's true. So way, way, way back when it sounded like you had all the time in the world, all the time, right, that's what life is. You always think of all the time in the world. We talked about whether you're chayav for pshia, or you're chayav for ownership, and we saw the Rif putting the word mamon, and we said, literally take the word mamon, and tell us. So this could be a milestone moment where Reish Lakish uses the word mamon to describe something which you can't really own. And what he really means is not mamon, but, again, in our jargon, I'll say it in a moment, so hold that thought. Tosfos is already sensitive to this. Let's try to, if you have your sheets that I gave you, or the Gemara. If you look at Tosfos, Chav Bei Zimun Aleph. So Chav Bei Zimun Aleph, Tosfos says, by the way, Isha Mishu Mamona, I don't take that literally. Klama chiyav mimono yeshbo. He puts in the word chiyav velo sheyesh shelo. You don't have to own the yesh, and he disagrees with Rashi, who at least in his mind implies you have to own the yesh. We don't have the Rishonim saying the pay word, but the Pnei Yoshua, ironically, says the pay word. The pay word we'd all like to slip in for mamon. It's okay, forget ownership, forget legalities, you have to watch it, you didn't watch it, you're negligent, you're chiyav. That's it. You and I would say until we have the problem, we'll see in a moment. So, again, try to see this machlokas as seminal, not just local. For a shlokas, she used the word mama, but that's something that you pretty much can't own if you agree with the Pnei Yeshua, and that probably would have been the best way to learn the sugya. I would have said, that's great, that's what this is, and maybe Rabbi Yochanan holds that you need to have ownership on regular niske mamon, and since you can't own fire because of less bay mamasha, he has to convert this into chitzav, whatever that means for the second part of this year. That's how I would have built the sugya until the two questions the Gemara asks on Reish Lakish. Okay, the Gemara asks two types of questions on Reish Lakish, on Chav Beis Amud Aleph and Chav Beis Amud Beis. Question number one is animals transporting fire. Question number two is, how could you generate Kimle B'Drabimideh? Those are the two attacks on Reish Lakish. If for you, we never reach chitzav status, number one, we're going to have a problem with the two animal transportations, one being the kelev, one being the gamel. The kelev is in our Mishnah, that's how we got to Eish. The gamel is in the sixth parak, we have the batan pishtan. And the other question is going to be this brisa, where you burn a field and you kill an eved, some yachayev misa or something like that, then you can apply kimle. How does that work according to Reish Lakish? And basically, in each case, Reish Lakish has to concede and said, you're right. My world of mamon can't accept, can't conceive of kamle, and therefore it has to be where you took the fire and put it on the eved itself. So basically, you killed him with your hands, you killed him with the fire. And my world can't allow Eish to be chayev where an animal transported, and therefore the animal took the fire and put it on the gadish directly, and on that thing you're chayev, or maybe through it, or... And on the Bira, he literally took the Pishdan, which was a flame, and went from house to house, applying the fire directly. But if animals just move fire, then the fire carries, as fires normally do, my world can't be chayv. Now the second question makes a lot of sense, according to Reish Lakish. The first question, not so clear. If the whole word mamono means pshia, that I'm a poshea by letting my fire move through the wind, why can't I also be a poshea when I let my dog take the fire to someone's house, someone's gadish, I let my animal carry fish down and get fired? Why does the Gemara attack Reish Lakish? You say mamono, how could you be chayev when your kelev takes mamono? Lav mamono debala kelev. What do you mean? The word mamono just means pshia. So I can be pshia for wind and I can be pshia for kelev. And lav mamono debala gamo. What do you mean? I can be pshia for setting a fire which a wind carries, and I can be pshia for the gamel, not watching my gamel, tan pishtan. When is the Gemara twice challenged us like, oh, you're Mr. Eishu, Mr. Mamono, love Mamono de Bala Kelev, love Mamono de Bala Gama. That's the breaking point in the sugya. That's where the sugya forces us to take the word Mamon and try to make it work more literally. Now, it's just to say, ah, come on, we all know the word Mamon here just means, come on, we just know it means Pshia, you and I both know. Wink, wink. No, no, no. Because if we're just wink, wink and Pshia, why would you have a problem with the Kelev? Now, Tosis is aware of this, by the way. And Tosis has a whole different way of understanding the Gemara's question, according to Eshlaka, which I'll just mention on the side, because it's not really an age conversation. And it could be the fact that Tosis has to redefine the question maybe indicates that Tosis really was like the Pnei Yeshua, and really did read Mamon Mishum Shia, and really did, like he says, say, don't take the word Mamon Dafka. It could be. I'm pretty convinced it's true, but he just never says it. He says it a little bit in Mimone Sbei Mamasha. If you look in Tosfos, the Mikol Makom, second wide line, Guf Hamamon Shepasha by Ismei Mamasha. When it comes to Tsroros, so there's some physical item that you could be chayiv to watch, namely the animal. This is Rabbi Yochanan talking. What Rabbi Yochanan says, I can't wrap the word Mamon around something with there's nothing physical to watch. Sounds like if we reverse engineer Reish Lakish, we don't really know. We're just hearing Rabbi Yochanan's concerns. But based on Rabbi Yochanan's concerns, it could be that Reish Lakish started talking about Pshia, and Rabbi Yochanan said, I can't imagine Pshia if there's nothing physical to watch. And Tsraros, at least there's something physical to watch. You watch your animal, even though the Nezik is generated by something, creating something non-physical. So we don't have Reish Lakish's voice, we have Rabbi Yochanan's voice, which makes us think, oh, he was responding to Reish Lakish. So I'm pretty convinced the three tells us then that he could be the Pnei Yeshua. I don't know. One is because he takes the word mamon lav davka, which, okay, everyone has to take a lav davka unless you hold, like we'll see in a moment. Number two is when the Gemara twice asks, oh, you feel mamon, how could you be chayiv for your kelev? Tells us doesn't fall into the trap, oh, you can't be chayiv because your kelev doesn't own it, because to him the word ownership is ridiculous. He says, just if you're following keeping score, Lav mimono debala kelev del eish shel kalba lochi avatar. The Torah says any secondary nezek that your animal creates, not with its body, you're not chayev, and Tosfos makes a drasha, right? Tosfos is pretty good at making up his own drashas throughout Shas. The Gemara says, we've stolen daf yud ishbor velo sharbor. If you're a shor, digs a bor, you're pater. You and I would think that's a bor halacha. Tosfos says, no, it's a bor and ish, and maybe even more halacha. You're chayev for nezikim that your animal does with its body. When your animal creates a bor, you're pater. When your animal moves an ish, you're pater. Which, of course, raises the specter, and that was the Tosfos we saw for Tzraros. So the fact that Tosfos has to redefine the question lends greater conviction that he may not have viewed the word mammon as something other than pshia. Therefore, the question was a problem. Why do you think I have a question? You're poshef for your dog, you're poshef for your camel. The answer is yes, I'm poshef for my dog and my camel, but I'm not chayiv for secondary damage of chamor, of shor and gamel, of caliph and gamel, because of gezeras akasa. So some behind the scenes, now this is your second run through the sugya, you're seeing things from a different perspective. You're seeing a broader discussion here rather than just getting lost in, okay, what is this shir, what is that shir? And all of a sudden pull back and, okay, maybe Tosfos really believe that it's shir like the Pnei Yehoshua. But if you take the word mammon pseudo-literally, you have one of two choices. Either you start thinking, like the Gemara says, that there are certain items that defy the normal patterns of ownership, but yet the Torah gives you full ownership. And the two models are, Shnei Devarim Eina B'shusa Shaladam, V'yasa Nakas of Kila B'shusin V'eluhain, Bar B'shusa Rabim V'chametz Nishnei Shara Sulamah. That's a very famous Gemara. Can't own chametz because it's Asur Bana. Classically, yet the Torah says you're Chayef by Rabbi Matzah. So evidently there is a mechanism whereby there are items that cause liability, which you don't have liability in theory, but Hashem gives you liability. Hashem says these are exceptional cases, mitigating circumstances. You can't own a hole in a Shusha Rabban. The answer is you do own a hole in a Shusha Rabban. You can't own Chametz. The answer is you do own Chametz. Unlike other forms of Yisir Hanah, like Shor HaNiskol. Right? Now again, this is a challenging Brisker moment because Brisk and Lamdus assumes the system is integral, that everything makes sense. Here you have Hashem creating a separate track. Once it's a separate track, it forces you to define in broader sense, what is bailus? I know that the normal standards of bailus don't apply to bor and don't apply to surinah, but Hashem can endow bailus when he wants liability. So that's way, 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 way beyond our pay grade, but just it's a whole new way of viewing it. We were enticed to view it that way, and then we'd solve all of our problems. Just like you don't really own a bor because it's just a hole in Rosh Hasharabim, you don't really own Eish because it's less Bema Masha. The answer is Hashem takes fire, which is a process called combustion, and puts that process into, there's nothing to own, just energy, you know, oxidizing fuel and creating energy particles. And Hashem says, that process called combustion of energy particles is yours. We saw the Tosfos Chachmei Anglia in Pesachim rejecting that. You can say it by bor, you can say it by chametz, you can say it by fire. Interesting, why not? Why would you say it by bor and chametz, not by fire? It seems to be, like I described, an easy distinction. A hole is still a location, right? A hole is a set of coordinates. It may not be ground and dust, but it's a set of coordinates. You can own a set of coordinates. Chametz is an item. Can I own a process? Even if I can magically own coordinates and chametz, I can't own a combustion. Okay, but that may be an option. Well, just because he says it, I mean, we have to agree with it, it could be that I can own Eish. Where we migrated towards was not owning the actual Eish, but a concept that the Tosfos Rabbeinu Peretz developed called Baal HaTakala. You're not the owner of something in legal sense, but you created a takala, similar to what we discussed in Bor. So we will discuss in Bor as we segue to Bor. And you're chayev on Eish because you are the Baal HaTakala. Now, could this be not just the Rabbeinu Peretz's view in Rish Lakish? He just says it. Pretty good, right? He hands us in a silver platter. Can we find other Rishonim who held like him? So the first obvious candidate is Rashi. Because when the Gemara attacks Rish Lakish and says, oh, how could you be chayiv? What does Rashi say? Dibur ha-maschil lav memono de bala kelev. You can't be chayiv for the dog taking the fire. Why? Ela de bala harara. Because the bala harara owns it. Someone else lit the fire. The person who made this pita or cake, whatever. It sounds like from Rashi, we do care about ownership of fire. Now, that seems strange because you don't really need a kinyan and you can't own fire. So we suggested that Rashi does not require ownership, but does require Baal HaTakala like the Rabbeinu Peretz. However, okay, this is the crucial, momentous however. I want to say it three different ways. However, according to Rashi, you can't be called Baal HaTakala when someone else lit the fire. You can't become Bala Takala when your dog moves it. You can't become Bala Takala when your gumbo takes the storefront fire. The Rebbeinu Peretz didn't condition it. Rebbeinu Peretz learned like Tosfos that the whole question of the Gemara had nothing to do with Mammon, had to do with his Gzeres HaKasav, you're not chayev for secondary nizikin of your animal. But can we lift the Rebbeinu Peretz's concept and apply it to Rishonim, who did impose certain monetary-like restrictions? Okay, you don't have to own the fire, but it can't have been lit by someone else. In the case of Bala Harara, he made the fire. In the case of the storefront, he made the fire. In some of the cases we saw in Samach Aleph, you can become Baal Takala because Liba, you blew the fire. So even though Yossi lit the fire, I inflamed it, so I can now be called Baal Takala because I didn't just transport it. My dog didn't transport it, but actually later. Or even if you don't blow the fire, if you are a human being and you take the fire from me and then you move it as a human being, you could now be called Baal Takala, which the Mishnah says, if I give the fire to a Pikach, the Pikach is Chayev, Ein Shech Dvar Averu, if I tell him to go burn down the field. So if a Pikach, or even for that matter, Chereshet of Katan were to take the fire, it's no longer Baal Takala. If I blow the fire, I am the Baal Takala, even though you lit the actual fire. But if you lit the fire and my dog just picks it up and moves it, that is not enough of an adoption of the fire to be called the Baal Takala. So when the Gemara says, oh, it's not the mammon of the caliph, it's not the mammon of the gumball, and Rashi took it literal, he didn't learn like Tosfos. Remember, Tosfos learned, we're not really asking a mammon, we're just asking, you're not chayiv with secondary damages of your animals. But it seems like Rashi took the Gemara's question literally. The caliph doesn't own it. What do you mean? We don't really need ownership, you can't own fire. Could Rashi be operating within the Rebbeinu Peretz that you're not really chayiv because you own it, you're chayiv because you're Baal Takala? Now we have to start rolling up our sleeves saying, can you be Baal Takala? Well, your dog takes the fire someone else moves. You'll be Baal Takala when you blow the fire. These are the questions that Pnei Yeshua asks in Rashi. What's the difference between a dog moving a fire, it's not Mammon according to Shlakish, and blowing the fire, and that's a Machalaf, or Pikech taking the fire? The answer is, there are big differences, because when I blow the fire, it's like, really, that's a new fire. That isn't even a question. But now a human being takes the fire, and I've taken the fire from you, and I'm literally, I'm holding the torch, and now it's my fire. When my dog or my gummel takes it, it's a lot of the Mammon of the Baal Gummel, because I wasn't really involved. Could that be Rashi Pshat? Could Rashi have adopted Rebbeinu Peretz, but applied it in a more narrow sense? Rebbeinu Peretz is widespread, therefore he has a problem. Why is the Gemara even asking anything? You're always a Baal Takala, and therefore he had to give Tosfos his answer. Could Rashi be operating in a much more nuanced fashion? Similarly, okay, we saw the Rebbeinu Hananel. Without getting into the gritty details of how Rebbeinu Hananel emerged, but if the dog were to actually lift the fire, a bigger chiddush, Rashi didn't say this, but if the dog were to actually lift the fire and carry it, then you would be chayiv. The Gemara's only question was if the dog doesn't lift the fire. Come on. Last time I checked, there is no such thing as kinyan hagba for dogs. Dogs don't make kinyanim. That's ridiculous. Could the Rebbeinu Hananel say, you know what, we have to make it into the Baal Takala? And Rashi may say, you can never be the Baal Takala when your dog takes it, because it's your dog. You can be the Baal Takala when you blow. Oh my goodness, post-trauma. Okay, PTSD on phones dropping. Hard week. Okay, don't drop your phones. Okay, so Rebbeinu Peretz says, you can always be a Baal Takala. I don't care what happens. And if your dog takes it, you're the new Baal Takala, and therefore the question has to be something else. Why not a Mammon Baal Takala? And Rashi says, you can never be a Baal Takala on a fire that someone else lit unless you blow it or a human being takes it. But you can't be a Baal Takala for your animal taking it. Could the Rebbeinu Hananel have adopted a much more nuanced position, somewhere between Rashi and Rebbeinu Peretz? You can't be a Baal Takala if your dog just grabs and drags. But you can be Baal Takala if your dog actually lifts the fire, as we saw in the Gemara, that lifting something above three tefachim is misalik maaser rishon, and it's like blowing a new fire. If I lift the fire, it could be authoring the new fire. We also were medayik something like that in the Rambam. The Rambam's read of that second question, where Reish Lakish is pressed against a wall, and he has to say, well, can't be a mona de Baal Gola, must be there's a long pishdan, you touched every piece of the city, or every Ajman city, that's called misachseches, where you actually applied fire to the location of the damage. The Rambam left out Misachseches. The Rambam didn't quote Misachseches based on his reading the Gemara. Could it be that I can't be called Baal Takala if my dog takes your fire? Because you created a fire and fuel, right? The bread is burning. So my dog, but what happens when it's your fire but my fuel? Where I put the pishtan on the gummel and the pishtan got lit from your fire. Can I become the Baal Takala when it's my fuel? The Gemara is unsure. The Rambam may have, the Gemara sounds like not, but the Rambam may have differed. How he reads the Gemara is a separate question. So this whole new, we'll take a look at the table in a moment, may have varying degrees of application. On the one hand, you're always Baal Takala, Rabbeinu Peretz, even if your dog takes it and the question has to be re-engineered. On the other hand, you're never Baal Takala, Rashi, if someone else lights the fire, unless you blow it or a human being takes it, but not for doggies and camels. Can there be mid-range cases where normally you're not Baal Takala, but if your dog lifts, you are? Normally you're not Baal Takala, but if your dog provides the fuel, or you provide the fuel through the dog, then you are Baal Takala. That is a summary. Okay, anyone not have a table? Okay, that is a summary of the right part of the table. So now let's look at the right part of the table. You'll see it unfolding. Anyone need it? Everyone have a table? Okay. The right part of the table, okay, Reish Lakish holds Ish is Mishum Mono. So there are two top line or top level circles. One is Mam and Mamish. Okay. I actually switched around the order because I'm not, what I just did right now is I took you through the sugya, how to learn the sugya. You start with Pshia, and then you have that problem. That's the crux of the sugya. The crux of the sugya is, why is the Gemara ask Alab Mamonu de Balakel? What I'm doing now is I'm reordering the logic, not based on the flow of the sugya, but based on the concept. So one approach is to say, really Mamon, and somehow we'll magically convert it into your ownership, us and a cause of Kilu Bishusa. The other approach is to say, it's something else. The word Mamon is Lab Dafka. What is that something else? That something else could be Pshia, Pnei Yoshua. That something else could be the Rabbeinu Peretz, that you're the Baal HaTakala. Underneath the Rabbeinu Peretz, when are you considered Baal HaTakala? So I actually gave you three. You want to write in the Rambam. So one approach is always, Rabbeinu Peretz, you're always Baal HaTakala, even if your dog takes someone else's fire, and therefore the question, Lav Mamonu de Baal HaKel, has to be reinvented. On the other end of the spectrum is Rashi, only your fire, either the fire you blew, or the fire you took, but not the fire that someone else lit that your animal took. In the middle is Rabbeinu Chananel, someone else's fire that your dog lifted, three tefachim, can be your fire. And if you want to add another arrow, the Rambam may say that even someone else's fire that your dog extended through your fuel may also be your Baal HaTakala. So if you're looking at the picture in this way, it's a slightly different orientation. Do you have real, real legal ownership? How can you own fire? We'll find some way. Or the word mamon is lav dafka. There are two ways to make it lav dafka. Okay, either way, the question, how do we understand the Gemara's question, Lav Mamonu de Baal HaKelev, it haunts this Pshia issue, the Pnei Yoshua. So the Aladayin Kasha, Lama in Lachayev al Eishel HaKelev midim Pshia, Ayin Tosos Dibim Masholav, Dein Lachayev Adam al Nezek, Shebehim Emi Yatzer. So you have to reinvent the question. Okay, this is Reish Lakish. We moved, in the second part of our learning, we moved to Rabbi Yochanan. Okay, so now let's talk about Rabbi Yochanan. When Rabbi Yochanan said, Isho, Mishom Chitzav, did he really mean it's Adam HaMazik? And we never fully had the chance to say, well, if it's Adam HaMazik, then why is it counted separately? Why is it one of the Dalet Avos Nezikin? Why is there a separate Pasuk? A separate Pasuk, okay, it's to make it Adam HaMazik. Without the Pasuk, you wouldn't know Isho Mishom Chitzav. But it sounds to the Mishnah as if it's a separate Mazik, even though Rabbi Yochanan holds Isho Mishom Chitzav makes it sound very much like Adam. You're chayiv in Dalet Dvarim. You're chayiv in Chovah B'Chavero. Or you're not chayiv Shor De'Azag Adam in Dalet Dvarim. Hey, Tashlumin. Your chayiv misat sounds like if you kill through Eish, and your pater on tamon, your chayiv on tamon, even though normally Eish is pater on tamon, according to Reish Lakish, because you are the mamazik. So it could very, very well be that our conclusion is that Eish is just another form of kochol, just like your chayiv on kichol v'neo, as the Gemara said, on spitting and mucus, you're also chayiv on Eisho. That may be one approach. Avi already reminded us, and Rashi already was very vague. The Gemara says, Isho mishum chitzav. Why did the Gemara say Isho Havikochel? Why did the Gemara say Isho Havikochel? What does Mishum Chitzav? So in terms of Rishonim wrestling with his question, we saw a dichotomy between the Rabbeinu Chananel and the Shita second model. Let's read the Rabbeinu Chananel because we have it in front of us. The Rabbeinu Chananel says on Daf Chav Beizim and Aleph Itmar, Rabbi Yochanan Amar Isho Mishum Chitzav Ki Ilu Biyadav Makei Vehu Hamazik Biatzmo Vedino Kedin Adam Hamazik Biatzmo. That's pretty indicting. If you're following, you saw a similar language of the Chiddush Yeran in Sanhedrin, but I didn't quote it because it's Rishon's not on the page. Whereas the Shita Zakamonim dialed it down. La Mishum Chitzav Mamish, he quotes all the words, just your chayiv, just like your chayiv, which again, we normally think about the Kaf HaDimayon, we could call this the Mishum HaDimayon. Just like by Kaf HaDimayon, you want to know how literally to take it. Similar to Shulchan Aruch Kim also, here we want to know how literally to take Mishum. Which means that every time you see these kafdimayons or mishum, that question should start to emerged out of the swamp of the Gemara, okay? How literally to take it, okay? Now, we gauge this question on, let's call it, five fronts. Front number one was when the Gemara is pestering Rabbi Yochanan, why doesn't Rabbi Yochanan just say, stop pestering me! Stop asking me why it's not Mamon. It's not Mamon because it's not them. Why does Rabbi Yochanan have to reject Rish Lakish? Why does Rabbi Yochanan have to poke holes in Rish Lakish? Oh, I can't say Mamon because less be Mamasha. Just say it's Adam Mamazik. If I'm damaging you with my hands, no one in their right mind would say, why is it not Mamon? Why is it not Mamon? Because it's not Mamon, because Adam's a separate trap. Why is the Gemara saying, Rabbi Yochanan, why do you not call it Mamon like Rish Lakish? Let him just say, because it's not Mamon, it's Adam Mamazik. The fact that Rabbi Yochanan, and we saw Tosfos have two days in this, the fact that Rabbi Yochanan was forced to defend himself and say it's not Mamon sounds like he doesn't really think it's Adam Mamazik. He just thinks it's a higher chiyuv than whatever he thought Rish Lakish was saying. Rish Lakish was saying, let's say, I don't know, Balatakala, let's for argument's sake say, and Balatakala, for argument's sake, won't be chayv in Dal Devarim, won't be chayv kimad rabinei. And Rabbi Yochanan was saying, I can't call it Balatakala because there's nothing physical. I can't call it Sinakasav. I can't call it Pshia. As Tosfos was saying, I have to make something up a little bit more direct. But it's not really Adam Mamazik. If we're Adam Mamazik, you won't have to defend why you didn't hold like the other person. It's Adam Mamazik Mamish. So that whole conversation against Rabbi Yochanan made us feel as if he really didn't meet Adam Mamazik Mamish. We looked at the Pasuk. Okay, the Pasuk is Pasuk HaKosav Be'adam V'Siyim B'Niske Pasuk HaKosav B'Niske Mimono V'Siyim B'Niske Gufo Lam Lacha Ishim Yishum Chitza. Remember, Ki Teitze Eish U'matza Kotzim Basada Shalim Yishalim HaMavir Es HaBe'era. Do we need the Pasuk to tell us it's Adam? That's what Reb Chaim said in Hilchos Shchenim. Okay, that way, if we didn't have a Pasuk, maybe I would say it's not real Chitza. The Pasuk is telling me that it's Mamash Adam Mamazik. Or the Pasuk is teaching us this new category, which we'll define a little bit later, not really Adam Mamazik, but something which is Chayv and Dal Devarim, and at least can trigger Kimlei scenarios. Okay, that's the question in Biyachon. That's the first front we began to think about it. Psuk in the conversation. Before we get to applications, just how does the Gemara treat Rabbi Yochanan? Does he have a source? Does he not have a source? The second front that we start to analyze it is what's the scope of Ishim Ishim Chitzav, our favorite nafgamina, scope is essence. What types of fire is considered Chitzav? So in our Gemara, we just have a fire. But what about if I don't light someone's field, but I let my gachela spread? Tosfos told us, Tosfos, Chaf Beis Amud Aleph, let's read Tosfos, Dibra Matzal Ishim Ishim Chitzav, Lo Sheyavir Bi'atzma Ho'esh, Elakol Makom Shepasha, V'lo Shamar Gachal To Chitzav Ninu. Not only when I light the fire, but when I let my gachelas become inflamed. Can there really be Adam Amazik? So if we just had this Tosfos on Chaf Beis, we'd say, yeah, maybe it was, because 3 hours ago when you made the mango, you actually lit the fire. The fire went out, but you know what? It didn't really go out. Because as long as the gachelas is still embering, you're lighting the fire. From 12 o'clock when you made the mongol, it's still a fire you lit. And we can see the 12 o'clock to 3 o'clock stage is still part of your process, and then you didn't watch it at 3 o'clock, and the winds came in and flamed it. But already Tosfos is making me think about how literally to take chitzav when it's not just I light the fire. The classic Azariah scenario in the Torah, I light the fire and it goes in them. Just, you know, I lit the fire 12 and then it went out and it didn't really go out. But more damning is the Gemara on Daf Chaf Beis and Beis Chaf Kimel and Aleph, which sounds like even if I didn't light it at 3 o'clock. So what's the language of the Gemara on Daf Chaf Beis and Beis? Amar Rava, Kro, Masnisa, Messiah. Again, this isn't even Rava's purpose. Rava's purpose is just to bring the Pasuk and the Svara. But while he's learned this about Shas, sometimes people, like a Freudian slip, this is called a Shasian slip, where the purpose of your halacha is to teach X, Y, and Z, but by and by you're saying things that have halachic meaning because they were so steeped in Lamdasha logic and Lamdasha knowledge that their words reflected deep, deep wisdoms of how they viewed Shas. So Rav is just coming to tell us the Svara and the Pasuk. But when he's telling us the Svara and Pasuk, a Freudian slip, he says, oh, by the way, Dichsiv Kiteitse Eish Me'atzma Yishalim Amavir. Me'atzma? Are you crazy? Me'atzma? Fire that just happens? Lightning strikes and fire happens? I'm chayav if I didn't watch it properly. So Rashi is like shocked. Rashi, no, not me'atzma. Rashi, Dibra Matzal Teitzei Me'atzma. Mashma, V'leka Luka Mikro, Kishidluku Atzma, Kedisha Chaver, Ela B'toch Shelo, Hidlik V'eishu Alcha Me'atzma. What Rava's saying is you don't need to light Yehuda Hain's house. You can light Yehuda Hain's neighbor's house in a cup, but you gotta light it. Not just that the fire happened. You lit the neighbor and it went to Yehuda's. Or you lit your own field and it went to Yehuda's house. But Rashi says, never imagine Yishim Mishim Chitzav if just a fire happens. That's ridiculous. The same drama happens again, Freudian slip, with the Gemara and Daf Chav Gimel. The Gemara Chav Gimel's purpose is to say, when can there be an Yishim Mishim Chitzav scenario that loses its Chitzav capacity? And then Rabbi Yochanan would have to default back to Bimono. That's the Gemara's conclusion. Rabbi Yochanan in the end accepts Bimono where you can't apply Chitzav. So the Gemara's point is where the walls were surrounding the fire and then, you know, the walls fell. And that can't be Chitzav because when the fire started, it didn't have a direct path because of the fireproof walls. That's what the Gemara says. But while the Gemara is describing that scenario, here's a Freudian slip. What's the case where you don't have a path and you can't see Yishim Chitzav? Heche Mishkachazah, line number 4. Kigon. Here's the damning word. Shenafla deleika leosa chatzer venafla gader shalom machmas leika v'holcha v'zika v'zika v'chatzer acharis. What does the Gemara mean, nafla deleika? Now, I have a little secret for you. Maybe it's just alliteration. Nafla deleika, nafla mechitzos. Maybe it's a way to remember nafila, nafila's mechitzos. But if you read it literally, sounds like nafla deleika. If a fire just happens, had there not been walls, path, chitzos. Since there are walls, no path, mamona. It sounds like michlalavat hashemen, that a fire that just happens, there's a straight path, and you don't watch it, that's chitzav. Again, reaffirming that fires that you don't start can be chitzav. Here too, the Bein Chananel, you know, it's all, no. Look at the Bein Chananel, line number 10, first word on the line, chav gimel, kigon shehitzis ish b'chotzer v'naflit leik. It changes the word naflit to hitzis. You know I'm lit your fire in your house. Had there not been walls, that would be classic chitzav. There are walls, that's mamon, but you got to light it. What Rashi does on Dav Chav Beis Amid Beis, the Rebbeinu Chananel does on Chav Gimel Menalef, and the Rebbeinu Tam also quotes the Rebbeinu Chananel, although he's not sure, which may be in line with the Rebbeinu Tam's version, that Isha is Lav Chitzav Mamish. So by starting to study the scope in Bava Kama of Isha Mishim Chitzav, maybe we can determine, the more that you extend Isha Mishim Chitzav to self-starting fires, it's hard to say that's Adam Mamasik. There's no human initiative. You're just not watching it. If you hold it, it's Mamish Chitzav, sounds like the Rebbeinu Chananel is. It's consistent Rebbeinu Chananel. On Daf Chav Beis, he calls it Mamish Adam Mamasik. And on Chav Gimel, he's unwilling to say Nefilat like a man. So it's Rebbeinu Chananel, as she does so, according to Rabbi Yochanan. Right? I'm not talking about Rebbeinu Chananel's comment in Rish Lakers. Now, when Rabbi Yochanan, sounds like he really viewed it as Adam Mamasik. What was a little bit nuanced in Bava Kama became very, very radical in two Tosas in Shas, in particular, Tosas in Sanhedrin Ayin Zion, paralleled by a Tosas in Bava Kama, Nun Vav. You think the Gemaras here are radical. Wait till you get a whiff of Tosas. Tosas believes that not only is a fire considered Isham Isham Chitza, because when you light the fire, you actually create all the physical forces necessary for the destruction. Fire moves, the wind is there, it's your fire. We can extend it, as we saw in Rabbi Yose's famous question. But also, when you put an Avno Sakino Maso on your roof, and the wind blows it, and there's really no continuity between your lighting the fire and its movement, you placed it there, the stone was comfortable for a couple of weeks, taking in the sun, getting a nice tan, and a couple of weeks later, Ruach Masuya comes and blows your stone onto someone and damages them in flight, that would be H, rather than landing, that would be either Bor or Shor, Machlos Rav and Shmuel. How could, that would be H, but that would be one of the drop-down cases according to Rabbi Yochanan, where you default from Chitzav and it's only Mimono. Tosva says no. Tosva says that a Avno Sakino Masa is also Ishmishim Chitzav. And therefore he has a whole problem in Sanhedrin Ayin Zayin, where the Gemara talks about a stone dropping in your putter. And when you throw it, the only reason you're chayiv is a kochel kolosh, when you throw it a normal spiral. Why is the Gemara struggling to make you chayiv ritzicha on a stone falling straight down or a stone? It's like Isha mishum chitzav. If Isha is mishum chitzav, you're chayiv and ritzicha. Putting a stone is also mishum chitzav. So why is the Gemara struggling to tell me why you're chayiv, why you're not chayiv, if you say Isha mishum chitzav by Avnos Akino Masau? And Tosu says something amazing. Tosa says in Sanhedrin Ayin Zayin, the whole sukkah there is only according to Rish Lakish, Shalom Libet Hilchasa. Because you hold like a Yochanan, you hold Yishim Yishim Chitzav, and you deploy Yishim Yishim Chitzav, Tazos Gina Masav. That's a very, very extreme Tazos. Shita Mekubetzes quotes the Ra'ah and Daphne and Vav, who argues that even though Avna Segina Masav is Eish, it's only Mishim Mamor, not Mishim Chitzav. Even more radical than applying Yishim Yishim Chitzav, Tazos Gina Masav, or Tegachelas to a fire that just started, is Tazos and Vav in Bava Kama. And tells us in Sanhedrin Ayin Zayin, what happens if Hillel lights the fire and I bend Yassi's Tzavua into the path of the fire? That's called Kofev Komaso. Okay, the Gemara Bava Kama Nunvav says Yuchayev. Let's, for the purposes of this conversation, say that if I bend an item into the path of destruction, that'd be Eishlai, whatever, but no one would call that, obviously, no one would call it Chitzav, right? I've nothing to do with the fire. You lit the fire, it's your Chitzav. I just bring the Davar HaNizak to the fire. Right, so you know, it's great. I'm chayiv. We'll find. Wait, we're gonna have that conversation. Why I'm chayiv? But is it isham isham chitzav? No way. Tosfos in Bava Kama and in Vav, and Tosfos in Sanhedrin Ayin Zayin twice says that that's considered isham isham chitzav. So if you start stretching and stretching and stretching and stretching isham isham chitzav to nafla deleika, Tosfos megamar Bava Kama, to avdan segina maso, Tosfos in Sanhedrin, to kofev komaso. It's pretty hard to call that Adam Hamasik. At a certain point, the scope becomes too broad that the concept becomes diluted, the category. Remember? I think I talked about that. I don't know why I said it, but it's stuck in my memory. You take first guys into yeshiva, you change the yeshiva. You guys must have been sleeping or something. Oh, you're in first guys. Right? Once you stretch the category so broad, then the category becomes diluted. Okay? So when you're talking about scope in essence, narrower categories allow for sharper definitions. Broader categories need more diluted definitions. It's just like a general way to think about it. So the more that you're going to come up, always say, does it belong to the category? Does it not belong to the category? Is it chayiv in this case? Is it not a chayiv? 70% of shasas are chayiv or patra in the case, and that will determine the category, whether you're chayiv or patra, how we define the category. Okay, so that was the second front along which we analyze Rabbi Yochanan. The first front was the Gemara's retort to Rabbi Yochanan, prove it, why don't you hold like Rish Lakish, do you have a pasuk? The second front was the scope. The third front along which we probe Rabbi Yochanan is Kim Leib Jerami, like that would seem to be a, excuse the expression, a smoking gun riot, right? If we apply Kim Leib Jerami to Isham Ishum Chitzav, it's because you're chayev for killing the Eved. And since you're chayev for killing the Eved, you're patur on the Kedib, and you're chayev Misa for killing someone through Yishim Yishim Chitzav, because it's Adam Hamazik. There's only one way we give you Misa, if we call that Adam Hamazik or Adam Haratzeach. And that seems to be Rashi. Look at Rashi, just so you should have an anchor point. Rashi, Dibra Maschel, Eved Kafus, V'gedi Samachlo, the top of the Gemara, Chav Gimel Amid Beis, Dibra Maschel, Eved Kafus, V'gedi Samachlo, your pater agadiv agadish, your pater on the monetary, the goat and the gadish, to come labid rabbinine, shehahoreg ha'eved neherak. So Rashi says it explicitly. Hahoreg ha'eved neherak. Hahoreg ha'eved yochayev misa for killing the eved ivri, of course. And therefore, you'd be pater on the agadiv agadish. Rashi chafbeis amadbeis. Hahoreg ha'eved neherak. If you don't hold that Isho's Adam amazik mamish, you have to find a way to say, oh, Adam, the Gemara never meant that you're chayiv for killing the Eved. The Gemara just meant that when you kill an Eved, we can exempt you from the Kedi and the Gaddish because we have a Kimlei apparatus available. What is a Kimlei apparatus without calling your Rotzeach and killing you for the Eved? Okay, Dovi, can you close the door? Dovi, please close the door. So we spoke about two options. One option is the run in Sanhedrin, saying you're not really chayiv for Rotzicha because maximum you're a garmi, but we would still apply kimlei even though we won't give you Rotzicha. The big chiddush of the Ran is that we apply kimlei even to cases of garmi. We're not going to call Isho mamish adam amazik. You're not going to be chayiv Rotzicha, but since you performed a maisa Rotzicha, you will not pay for mamon. What does that sound like? Who can tell me which other case do we apply kimlei even though you don't get Rotzicha? Where if you do a Maisa that's Mechayev Misa, but you do it B'shogeg, let's say Mechal Shabbos B'shogeg, you still don't pay Mamon. So we can apply Kimlei, this is a Kimlei Chiddush, even when you don't get the Misa, as long as you did a Maisa that resembles something that would otherwise be Mechayev Misa, it's a Chiddush in the Ran. Shogeg is one thing, because you do the same Maisa, just lack of intent. Here it's a little less direct, but it's a conversation. Can we apply Kimlei, even though you pater from Misa, if you did a Misa Garmi, that you'd still consider a Misa Ritzia? A different approach, which is also a big, big chiddush, is the Rashba. The Rashba says that the entire time the fire is being lit, and the field is burning, and the fire is moving to the Eved, you have a status of a Rodef. And since you have a status of a Rodef, any monetary damages that happen during that period as the fire is burning, you're pater. That's a tremendous chiddush in Rodef. I'm sitting there on my porch drinking tea. The fire is raging, getting to your Eved. You can't really prevent the death of the Eved by killing me, right? It's not going to really affect the fire. But since I've caused the death to happen, the time that it takes, that elapses until the death happens, makes me into a Rodef. Don't ever forget this Rashba when you learn Rodef. When you Mirtz Hashem, when you learn Rodef, make sure you take out this Rashba and you think about the Rashba in terms of Rodef. But the Tzana Shava, between the Ran and Sanhedrin, and the Rashba is they're trying to justify applying Kimla even though you're not Chayev Misa for a Tzichas Eved because we don't want to call Isha Mishim Chitzav Adam Hamazik Mamish. That's the third front of this whole discussion. The fourth front of this whole discussion, Rabbi Yochanan, you just go through the Gemara, is why would I be putter on Isha Mishum Chitzav when the Cheresh Shotev HaKatan takes the fire? Remember, we looked at Cheresh Shotev HaKatan taking the fire through the prism of Reish Lakish. This is back on Daf Tes, if you remember. Reish Lakish doesn't hold Chitzav. What's the difference between a Cheresh Shotev HaKatan taking the fire, that's your putter, and the Cheresh Shotev HaKatan taking your shor and bor to watch and your chayev? The Gemara had some very cryptic statements, shor, dark and lenture, bor, dark and lenture, gecheles kamed ma'amya amyele va'azel, the gecheles that you gave the Cheresh Shotev HaKatan is going to slowly extinguish. Because according to Reish Lakish, the only time you'd be pater on Eish is if you give the Cheresh Shotev HaKatan gecheles. It's about to go. If you give the Cheresh Shotev HaKatan shel heves, you're going to be chayev. It's crazy. But the Gemara says, according to Rabbi Yochanan, even if you give the Cheresh Shotev HaKatan shel heves, you'd be pater. And therefore, that eases Rabbi Yochanan. The time you're chayev by shor and bor is you give him an open bor, an open shor, comparable to shel heves. You don't have to get into this dark elenturi, dark elentuki business, according to Rabbi Yochanan, because you're pater on shel heves, for the reasons we'll talk about, and you'd be chayev on a shel heves like shor and bor, which is an open bor and an untied shor. So Rabbi Yochanan has an easier time with shor and bor because he can set the case based on his views of Eish, at least according to Rashi, in ways that make the shor and the bor really, really untied and untamed and unwatched. And the question is, why are you pater, according to Rabbi Yochanan, if you give a shel heves to a cheresh shota v'kata? So Rashi says, aha! Chitzav, because it can't be called your chitzav where another human being takes it from you. Rashi, Chaf Beis Amud Beis, Dibra Maschel of Rabbi Yochanan Amar Filo Shel Heves Pater, Rabbi Yochanan Letamei, Dama Isham Isham Chitzav, V'hacha Chitzav D'Cherashim. And because presumably Rashi takes chitzav so literally, and you can't be Adam Amazik if someone, another human being takes it from you, you can be Adam Amazik when there's wind. You can't be Adam Amazik where another human being takes it from you. That when I say chitzav decheresh, I'm not only explaining why the original igniter person is pater mishum chitzav. Once it's chitzav of decheresh, it becomes his extension. I'm not even chayav for mamon, because we already know that according to Rabbi Yochanan, even when you can't be chayav mishum chitzav, because you'll be chayav mishum mamono. And yet I'm totally pater, according to Rabbi Yochanan, when the decheresh shotev HaKatan takes the fire. So this concept of adam hamazik, that it's literally, Rashi l'shitasa, you're chayav for killing the eved, because it's mamash adam hamazik. If Rashi takes chitzav literally, so once the cheresh takes it, he has adopted it. I am no longer the Adam Amasik. And not only that, but he's the Adam Amasik, and he's mafkia any possibility of Mechayev Amam, because I've been completely dislodged in this case. Tosfos may be in line with Tosfos' general sheet. Remember, Tosfos expanded the scope of Isha Mishim chitzav, making us think it's not really Adam Amasik? Tosfos says, no, no, no. When the Gemara says that if you give it to a cheresh shel heves v'katan, your pater has nothing to do with Rabbi Yochanan's sheet. It's a separate autonomous machlokas, having nothing to do with Rabbi Yochanan's Isha Mishim Chitzav. Namely, Tosa's version of Isha Mishim Chitzav would not exempt you in a case of Cheresh Shotev HaKatan. It's not enough to exempt you. You could still say Isha Mishim Chitzav when the Cheresh Shotev HaKatan takes it from you. And if we don't have another reason, whatever that reason is, reason X, to make you pater by Cheresh Shotev HaKatan, and that's an unrelated reason, there's no way you'd be pater. Isha Mishim Chitzav would still make you chayev, even the Cheresh Shotev HaKatan takes it. So you have to find some other reason. I'll tell you that reason in a moment, but I want you to get caught up with the reason. I want you to see the structure. There has to be some reason that Rabbi Yochanan says you're part of by Shalhabas. What is the reason? It has nothing to do with the Machlokes of Yochanan. It's just Tosfos has a chiddush because he's forced into a corner that Rabbi Yochanan only says Chayev by Ruach Mitzuyah Mamish. And the chiddush of the Verkatan is not a Ruach Mitzuyah Mamish. Wind, you know, talking about where it's a wind that happens every single day in Frisch. I don't know. Every single, get back to saying something nice about Frisch. So like Mamish, chiddush of the Verkatan, it sounds to me and you're like, it's Mitzuyah, they're pyros, they're going to take it, but it's not as Mitzuyah Mamish. And why wouldn't you be Chayev for Mammon? Another reason, not Bar Yizek. It tells us really has to struggle through the Sugya. Rather than just saying, it's a B'yachonon L'shitaso. Then when the Cheresh takes it, it's no longer your Adam Amazik. And in fact, it's so much his that it's not even your Mammon, and you'd be Pater. That's the fourth front of Rabbi Yochanan. It's all in the Gemara. Rabbi Yochanan, why do you hold like a Shlakish? Number two, expanding the scope. Number three, are you Rotzech or not? Does Kamlay indicate that you're Chayiv Ritzich? Number four, how come your pater isha mishem chitzav by chereshat v'katan? Number five is a flip around. Not how come your pater, but how come your chayav. The Gemara says that one of the nafkaminas between Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish is would you be chayav on tamun by a full class eish. Rish Lakish, of course, we have a mishnah that says your pater on tamun. That everyone has to accept that. It's a drasha. The Gemara says that if it were Isha Mishum Chitzav, we couldn't apply Tamun. Tamun would not apply Isha Mishum Chitzav. Forcing Rabbi Yochanan to admit that there must be some sub-layer of Eish called Mammon in which you do apply Tamun, because he has to accept Tamun. So if he's going to reject the Torah Tamun by Isha Mishum Chitzav, he's got to have a second layer of Eish, or else he'd be against the Torah. So he can't be against the Torah. So that forces the Gemara. So Rabbi Yochanan has a case of Isha Mishum Mammon, and that's what Tamun is Pater. But in the classic Isha Mishum Chitzav, and Alex, for our purposes, that's what we're honing in on. What is Isha Mishum Chitzav? In the classic Yishma Shem Chitzah, where there's a path, we won't apply Talmud. Why won't you apply Talmud? Why not? So Rashi, and interestingly enough, Tosfos, right? A little bit of a break in Tosfos, but this is classic Rashi. It's Adam Mamazik. What does Rashi say? Chav Gimel Amin Aleph, Heichem Mishkach Asla, Ilu Adam Zorek Chetz V'Hizik B'Talmud, L'Bachayev B'Nezek. If I take an arrow and throw it at you, of course I'm chayiv and concealed items. So it's just like throwing an arrow. The Mazik Mamish, how could Tosfos say the same thing? But he says, because you see that there are various Peturim Tosfos says by Shane and Regel. Avil, fourth line in Tosfos, Dibur Maschal Tamun. Be Adam Hamazik. It's very interesting that Tosfos is willing to call Adam Hamazik. Tosfos, what about your other Tosfos in Shas? I'd like to go back and see a wrestling match between Tosfos and Bava Kama and other Tosfos in Shas. But Tosfos and Bava Kama, whoever wrote this and said this, is comfortable calling Adam Mamazik, thereby justifying the non-application of the Peturah Tamun. If we hold that Chitzav is not Mamish, then we have to try to find a way to explain why Tamun won't apply. So to do that, we dug deeply into Tamun. Is Tamun really a Gezeres HaKasav? Or is Tamun essentially when you wrap something, since my fire can only damage the enclosed item by burning through the outside item, then I'm not chayiv because there's not enough continuity between my eish, even without using the dreaded aleph word. Can I explain why tamun doesn't apply to eish, even without calling eish adam amazik? You're chayiv because you made a takala that endangered something. You're chayiv because you set a fire. The Torah makes a new chayiv without calling it adam amazik, but it's considered something that you directly... I didn't get a chance to talk about this in Shir. Could we say that Eish is a paradigm for human involvement in other things, but your chayev, remember, ubir b'steacher, ke'en ubir, ke'en v'shilach, that it's not just your pshia, but it's like you have a hand in it, and you have a hand in your animal in Shein V'regel, and you have a hand in your animal, and you have a hand in the Eish. But that's only with his direct line of fire. If the item is concealed, and to get to the internal item, you need to burn through the outside item, and you're not really considered a chayiv. And we saw this in the Or Sameach. Remember, the Or Sameach says that if my eish burns a pregnant cow and the fetus doesn't get burned but dies because the mother dies, I'm chayiv on the fetus, even though legally, formally, it's tamun, because I didn't have to burn through to the fetus to kill the fetus. I just have to burn through the shell. And once the shell dies, the fetus is going to die. So it's not really whether it's in a physical state of concealment or not a physical state of concealment, because an embryo is concealed. It can't be more concealed than a baby in a mother's womb, in a female womb. But is because I didn't really endanger it. And we saw this in the Gemara, Daf Samach Aleph, without getting into the difference between lighting my field and your field and kelim that are there or aren't there. Can we try to find a way not to pater you for tamun by Ishim Shemchitza without calling Ishim Shemchitza Adam Amazik? Those who don't want to call Adam Amazik, can you find a way to describe why you won't be pater for tamun? It required us to do a little searching in tamun. The fifth, and really the last thing that's not, we explored it because it's a famous conversation, but most of the conversation isn't really germane to this topic, is the famous Nimuk Yosef's Kasha. How come if you hold Ishim Shemchitza up and I light the fire before Shabbos, how come I'm not chayav? Because every minute it's like I'm lighting it again. Okay, the answer is because even if you say hyper-radical Ishim Shemchitza up, it just means your Maisa is Nigmar and you're chayav like we're throwing an arrow. It's like you're throwing it every minute. And that's basically what the Nimuk Yosef answers. But if you don't hold Ishim Shemchitza mamish, you never ask the question. It's not Adam Mazik, you're not really the Madlik. No, Nimuk Yosef, it's clear he felt Ishim Shemchitza mamish, Adam Mazik mamish. It's like you're lighting every second, the fire becomes your tool. And there are a million ways to answer. We talked about the Ktzos, whether you'll bust a Meikara when you set the fire rather than throwing the Kli. Beautiful, beautiful Lundas, but doesn't really change the dynamics of Ishim Shemchitza, rather than assuming that the Nimuk Yosef was squarely in the Adam Amazik camp, or else he never would have. And in his rejection, Henry doesn't like say, oh, you know, Chitzav's not mamish. Like, don't go to the Rebbeinu Tam's territory and say, like, ah, it's not mamish Chitzav. The whole question is ridiculous. So, like, the question is a legitimate question, and he finds ways to distinguish in more subtle ways between lighting a fire and being Mechal Shabbos. Sounds like it's a Chiddush and Chilul Shabbos. Okay, so now if you want to take a look at the left part of the table, okay, it's relatively simple. We just follow the trail. Is it Mishum Chitzav Mamish, Ki Adam Amazik, Rebbeinu Chananel, Rashi, or Lavi Adam Amazik to the right, Ela Maisa Nezek, more than Mishum Mishum Mano. We had several different ways to define it. All we have to say, and we talked about the skill a few times already, whenever you have two people talking to each other, sometimes they talk in very, very radical terms. Oh, you old mama and I hold chitzav. And really, the conversation may just be relative. Oh, relative to your mammon, it's a little more than mammon. Now, they didn't have math equations. They didn't have more than mammon. What was Rabbi Yochanan's way of saying it's more than mammon? He said, chitzav. So sometimes the language sounds very broad, but when you apply, we'll do this again in Mirza Shem tomorrow on Friday, Yudei Tur, Yudei Gavra, Yudei Gavra may just be a way of saying you need three different arrivals and appearances in Beis Din, rather than what the Rambam may have thought it was, or Beta Peretz, that you're actually turning the person into a Rasha. Yudei Gavra just doesn't, you have to learn how to contextualize Mechloksin. Even though the language sounds very, very ambitious and very audacious, I'm just saying, you're Mamo, and it's a little more than Mamo. What word do I have that's more than Mamo? I'll use the word Chitza. So, is that really what Rabbi Yochanan was saying? The Nafkaminos were, again, the first is the Hekef, that's why it's bracketed. Do you say Shum Shum Chitza by Gachela, Shum Shum Chitza by Nafzod Leika, Shum Shum Chitza by Avzkin Maso, Shum Shum Chitza by Kav Kom Maso, everything we talked about. Number, hey, I just made them more explicit for you, why is there Kamlai by Shum Shum Chitza? Number of Av is, why by Maso the Cherashat of a Katan is the person Chayiv, even though you give a Shalhevis? Number Zion is, why isn't there Ptur Tamun Be'esh? Okay, got a little bit erased, so maybe write in. Aleph is to have the Adam Hamazik Ayin Rashi Vitosos Chav Aleph. To have the Adam Hamazik Ayin Rashi Vitosos Chav Aleph. Number base is, that's all erased, Chiddush B'din Tamun. The Chiddush in Tamun that you would not be Pater if the fire is sufficiently lit. And that whatever the Ptur Tamun that applies to Mamon, it wouldn't apply to Ishim Shem Chitza, which is more than Mamon. Okay. Pretty good, right? Take six or seven sugyos and put them together. All of a sudden, this is a snapshot that gives you clarity, gives you organization. Let's try over the next day and a half. I really want to give you more time for Mu'ud, but just I don't want this to drag. Let's see over the next day and a half if we can just quickly learn Mu'ud. It's not as large as Aish, it's certainly not as large as Shein and Regel. We'll show you on Friday. The only caveat has, I think I have to check that maybe a visitor tomorrow. I don't know what's going to happen with him, but we'll solve it. I don't want Chazara to bleed into next week. Okay, so we'll see whether we do have a visit or we don't, and how we'll work out here. Okay? Okay, guys. Okay, these are the challenging times of an Ibra year. The challenge is, you know, everyone's a little bit gassed. On a normal year, it would be Purim already, and we'd let go. I remember Rav Lichtenstein being very, very makbid Rav Aaron to give us sichot every time there's a Shana Mubarak, and forcing us to remember. He once told us again, in 1983, this was not a racist statement. In 2024, you have to be careful how you speak. So I'll just say the story. But Rav Aaron, I remember one Chodesh Elul, the Chodesh Adar Aleph, told us the story of Newt Rockne. So Newt Rockne was the legendary coach of the Fighting Irish. And evidently, one year, they were playing in a championship game, and they were getting pasted by the opposition. They walked into the locker room like 35 to nothing, and they were getting demolished. So everyone was waiting for the famous Newt Rockne to give his Musser Schmooze and to galvanize everyone. He came into the locker room, he sat on the bench, and didn't say a word. 10 minutes passed, didn't say a word. Gets a little uncomfortable. Everyone knew they were underperforming. He's not saying anything. 20 minutes passed, not a word. Everyone's getting a little nervous. 30 minutes passed, let's say 30 minutes was the intercession, not a word. The buzzer sounds, everyone's got to get back to the field. And he says one comment. He says, "Come on, ladies, let's go play the second half." Now again, today that would be a misogynist statement. But in the old times, ladies, it was a way of just saying, you know, weaklings, whatever, patsies. So it's just that one statement, "Come on, ladies, let's play the second half." Evidently, I wasn't there at the game. I'm not a, you know, fan of Fighting Irish football. Or they went out and they were so enraged by their coach calling them ladies that they went out and, you know, devoured the other team, caught up and won the game. I don't know which game it is. You can probably do on the internet. When were the Fighting Irish in the biggest comeback in Fighting Irish history? So we heard the story. Like we say, where is he going with this? Like, it's an interesting story. But so Rav Aaron pauses, a pregnant pause. And he says, "Come on, ladies, let's continue Adar Aleph." And that's how, like, we're so enraged. We're like, decided we're going to bring our best game to Adar Aleph. Again, in those days, these were the way we spoke. We're probably less misogynist than many people today. That's just the way we spoke. And obviously today, you have to be careful not to use that language because it's very hurtful to people. Anyway, the point is not how you use your language, but it's very easy to let things slip a little bit and to let your energy dip. I'll give you one or two bits of advice, which I always call overcompensation. Now, the Rambam talks about overcompensation, that in order to correct against a mita, sometimes you have to swirl a little bit to the opposite end and try to overcompensate just so that you'll balance out. Obviously, waking up in the morning, we're not going to talk about that. I don't want you to get into the eye rolling. You know, as you roll your eyes, you're not going to listen to me anymore. A nice thing to think about, to overcompensate, just to set a certain tone for yourself, is to try, if you can, try not to leave the base matters till 1 o'clock. Now, once you start leaving a little bit early, it creates an environment against, you know, an environment of, you know, take it easy, it's leisurely, I'm showing up, I'm not showing up. If you really want the next month to be committed learning, then you have to work at the little things, not just the big things. So you say, attitude, I'm going to commit myself. If you decide, I'm not going to leave at 12:56, I'm going to leave at 12:57, I'm going to stay, I'm going to continue. Even myself, for me, I hardly eat lunch. So for me, the timing is all washable. I'm just, my whole day, I don't even notice sometimes lunch. But I've been trying to be mocked with the last couple of weeks. You know, sometimes I have to leave whatever. I'm not going to leave before 1. However that affects my schedule, it'll affect my schedule. If you're able to find that or some other little thing, it could be, you know, I'm going to stay up till 2:30 in the morning every night. You know, good luck with that, you know, last 3 days. But try to find some anchor and stick to it that will set for yourself an attitude that I want to take this time seriously. And hopefully it will train you in life not to wait for things to end, not to give away time, not to say, well, it's the end anyway, or I'm tired anyway, but to try to be as hardworking and diligent and maximize and force yourself when you're exhausted. Because again, all the skills in yeshiva are life skills. If at these moments in your experience, you just let things slip, you become a chronic slipper, and you become very, very aimless, and you squander your resources. Try yourself. Obviously, this is not just important because it's a life skill. This is Avodas Hashem, and Avodas Hashem is Avodas Hashem. You work hard at Avodas Hashem because you want to try to become an Oved Hashem. So it's hard and it's long. Again, not that you need external incentivization, but again, please, please listen to me. I've said to some of you this privately. You're going to come back, and it's really just a six-week tour. And especially this year, because I don't even know what's going to happen in Yom HaZikaron. Whatever's going to happen, it's going to be apocalyptic. It's not going to be Yom HaZikaron. It's the most soulful day of the year. And, you know, there's no learning going to happen in Yom HaZikaron, obviously. And all the right things we do for you and with you, and I do them myself. I imagine this year, I can't imagine it to be a Yom HaZikaron. It's going to be 3-4 days of Yom HaZikaron. Like, just the numbers. Like, you can't know what they're going to do. But whatever we do, It's going to be Yom HaZikaron. It's going to be Yom Atzmaut. It's going to be Yom Yishalayim. It's going to be Lag BaOmer. The irony is not even going to be Shavuos this year, because Shavuos is basically when you left, like June 12th or something, we'll have you. So if this Zman starts May, anyone else? Second, third, fifth. Do the math. I mean, between May 5th and June 15th, like with all these breaks in between, that's the price you pay for Shana Mubaris. And like, it's not our choice, by the choice. In terms of purely Shana Aleph terms, I'd eliminate all Shana Mubaris, which means you'd be eating matzah in the freezing snow. But the calendar is set, so we have to follow it. So it's not our fault, it's not your fault, but just Chachamein of Barosho, if March is weak and you're waiting, you know, but I'm going to turn up the steam in May, you may find that May doesn't exist. So try to make March as intense as you can, at least until Purim, and just, you know, work hard at these things and try to reset attitudes. Again, you know, it's in your hands at this point. We're too late at the stage that anything I'm going to say is going to like revolutionize your consciousness or anything we're going to do. It's just owning it and saying, you know, there are things that are worth struggling for and being tired for and getting up for and showing up for, whatever issues you're trying, roadblocks trying to overcome. I think the 1 o'clock thing is a nice statement to yourself. That there's nothing right now during my 1 or 2 years in yeshiva that could justify taking off, you know, what do you mean? What's the difference? You shouldn't take off learning at all, but at least to keep my star, I mean, at least, you know, people in the base matters, not to, you know, walk out. And again, you know, this is all uncharted territory, but in the summer, it's going to be an empty base matters. You're not going to have shir bet. So it's basically just shir aleph and benichut slaretz, and, you know, I don't know who's going to be back, who's not going to be back. We're still waiting for shir dalet to come back, you know, any day now, but okay. So just try to process it, put it into motion, each person, you know, like, hopefully at the point right now where it's something like you. You don't need us to, just raising flags rather than pushing you. Okay? Okay, so we'll have Shir Meretz Hashem on Friday. I have all three things for you in the base matters. Okay, I have the Makaros. Did I give out Makaros already? Okay, so I have Makaros, underlines. Let me just, again, there's so many papers flying around. Let me give it to the base matters and we can get started. Okay? Friday morning in Meretz Hashem, we'll have Shir. Okay.